we're back.
Yes, we are.
The American poet Nelly would say it's getting hot in here. But it's just you and me, so we can't strip because that'd be weird. Also,
as
nothing
far as they know.
Also, nothing we haven't done before. Welcome back to Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
We're the sauna of American podcasts.
That's right. We're here to get hot.
The YMCA man's locker room.
Sweaty. We're doing a Hollywood hot take today on Mike, Mike, and Oscar. Taking a break from the Oscar Sprint profiles, of which I believe we have one left.
I get your metaphors now. Yeah, no, we got one left. All the money in the world's coming. But we wanted to interject a news episode, a Hollywood news episode. Here it is.
Or two left, depending on when I feel like editing.
Oh, right. Roman J. Israel.
But Roman J. Israel's in the can.
We record it. Yeah, it's in the can. Yeah, I like that. Film speak. Look at you.
Yeah, huh? I'm a
movie person.
Person.
Talks about movies.
I forget all the words. We're doing a Hollywood hot take today, like we said, and we've done a couple of these already. Kind of like to every once, every couple months, fill you guys in, catch you guys up on all the big stories gripping Hollywood and affecting the Oscar races and affecting the movie industry and where this show is going from here, and talk about our future a little bit and what you guys can expect from us in the future and the immediate future. So that's what we want to fill you everyone in on today.
We've actually been every month, I think.
Have we?
And they've gotten decent play. So
it's almost like we have somebody scheduling these.
You guys like us.
Yeah, these programs, huh?
I don't know who that is. He's doing a good job, though.
And he's handsome.
Devilishly handsome.
So if you want to reach out to us before we get started here, like we always love hearing from you guys, any kind of feedback, what do you think about the Oscar Sprint profiles? What do you got for your Oscar takes? Anything you would like us to see us do going into prediction time for Oscars as those are coming around the bend? It's going to be February already? Good God.
Yeah, it's here.
We're almost there.
Final month as we're sprinting, and we got those seven category pods coming up, the big seven, the four acting categories, best original screenplay, director, and picture coming up after the Oscar Sprint profiles.
Yeah, very exciting stuff on the horizon for us, but we're going to get into all that and then some more. We know we've been teasing those episodes, but we got a little more for you today about the future of Mike, Mike, and Oscar, as well as all the other big news items that have been circling around the drain and the cesspool that Hollywood has become for a part of it anyway.
Reality has sucked.
Yeah, it sure has.
But you're watching movies with us, so you're feeling better.
That's right. We're the escapism. We're the eject hatch that you need from life.
So let's talk about sexual assault and all those good things. No, I mean, we're trying to find the balance. I feel like we're doing okay, and we're having meaningful discussions.
Be part of this discussion. You want to interplay with us and give us your thoughts. We'd love to hear them. We're Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MMO_pod on the Twitter machine. Mike, Mike, and Oscar @gmail.com. Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit. We're everywhere. Just type in Mike, Mike, and Oscar on most social media feeds right now, and you're going to find us. And we love interacting with you guys. We love hearing from you guys. We're getting a lot of comments on Twitter lately, getting a couple comments on Instagram. Mike has been posting on Reddit the last couple days.
Thus far, the Twitter people are fun to talk to. Like, we haven't had the trolls. So you're good people. We're happy that we're not just creating an audience here, building an audience. We're chatting with good folks. So.
And you're all invited to Thanksgiving at our table this year.
Super Bowl party at also Mike's house.
That's right. That's first things first.
Yes.
So let's dive into all these. We have, I think, six burning topics about what we're going to talk about today. So the first topic, and we tease it a couple times, you guys know what's on the immediate horizon for Mike, Mike, and Oscar. You know about the future of Mike, Mike, and Oscar in terms of what comes after the Oscar Sprint profiles. Also, Mike just told you that post-Oscar Sprint profile, after the All the Money in the World episode, we're going to dive right into the seven major categories for the Oscars. This is the Best Original Screenplay, the four acting categories, Best Director, Best Picture. That's in the immediate future leading up to the Oscars. For the Oscar program itself, we're batting some ideas around. We're going to do something for that. Obviously.
Yes.
We're also going to have our own award show coming out around Oscar time.
The Mike, Mike, and Oscars.
We're calling it the Mike, Mike, and Oscars.
We've been workshopping that name for months.
And it's really going to be a year-long, a 2017 year-in-movie perfecting perfection, which we haven't done in a while because we've been doing
the
all these Oscar Sprint profiles. But for those of you who don't know or don't remember, perfecting perfection is something we do in all our Oscar retrospectives, where we take the nominees as stated and we re-rank them. So we give you a 5-to-1 our rankings of what they should have been.
And we're going to do that in the category pods, the category review pods. Then the overall perfecting perfection for our Mike, Mike, and Oscars is we're going to take the whole field.
That's right.
And
the entire year of movies.
The entire year of movies, or most of them, certainly. And yeah, you're going to see Good Time pop up. You're going to see all the other movies that you ought to check out that says us.
You won't see Roman J. Israel on our Best Picture list, I don't think.
No.
So that's what we're going to do. Those are the Mike, Mike, and Oscars. We're going to give you, basically, it's going to be our year in review show. We plan on being a big one, and we're both excited about it. So that's coming around Oscar time. Post-Oscar award show, we have a couple things in the fire. You want to kind of lead us off here, Mike, and tell them what's coming?
The Netflix quarterly or half a yearly or biannual, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
We don't know how often we're going to do the Netflix pods, but we do want to cover the big new movement in cinema, which is streaming services launching their own original movies weekly, monthly. They're coming out with three or four really good ones. I watched The Polka King with Jack Black. I watched A Futile and Stupid Gesture, the story about the documentary Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, based on Doug Kenny and the folks at the National Lampoon, and now with Will Forte in the movie.
I'm very excited to see that. Is that as funny as it looks?
I enjoyed it. I just wish David Wayne tried to be funnier. Like, there's no, like, crazy jokes in it, but I enjoyed watching that movie. And if you watch the documentary along with it, which I rewatched after watching the movie, that was a fun kind of little mini deep dive that Netflix had for us.
You can't say Netflix isn't branching out into all areas. Look at some of these properties that they're putting forth, and they are eclectic.
Oh, yeah.
To say the least.
I did try to watch Bright. I got halfway through it. I'm going to try to get through the rest of it. I hear a lot of bad reviews on it. It wasn't terrible what I watched.
If you look closely, I think you might find a metaphor for racism in that one.
There might be a metaphor or two in that movie, yes. So it's a bit of a hot mess at the beginning, but there's some worthwhile factors to it. So I know that was a 2017 Netflix original movie, but since we did our year in review for Netflix, you know, that's come out and it's one of the biggest movies. So we'll probably review that in some way, shape, or form on the next Netflix pod. You know, Mute, the Alexander Skarsgård / Paul Rudd movie by Duncan Jones.
We need a battle royale with this, all the Skarsgårds, all the Francos, just all those families with multiple parts, and there can only be one winner, right? We can't have a billion of these people walking around Hollywood.
Just for our amusement, yes. / convenience.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So, yeah, Duncan Jones, he's done Source Code Moon and Warcraft, and he's coming out with a new movie, which trailer dropped a couple days ago.
If you haven't seen the trailer, it is very interesting, and it's Paul Rudd in a fantastic mustachio.
It's a mustache and a half. But yeah, the stash is probably worth the price of admission. I also like his lines that he's delivering in that trailer. I don't like any of the other dialogue, so that scares me. I hope it's like a Rogue One Phantom Thread situation where all the expositional dialogue in the trailer is actually cut from the movie.
What did you think about Skarsgård's dialogue in it?
Yeah.
He's a mute.
So he's the mute one. He's got this mysterious girlfriend / lover / whatever who's involved with some...
It's Fifth Elementy.
Yeah.
You got some Fifth Element inspiration there.
I mean, the science fiction landscape looks like it's going to give you your fix if you're a sci-fi fan. So Duncan Jones is a very, you know, visually accomplished director from his other movies. So I think it's going to be worth watching, and I'm excited about it. It drops the end of February. We also have Open House, which is a horror movie that came out this month. My Happy Family, which is an acclaimed foreign film. So Netflix has a full slate of movies. I think there was a couple more that interested me, that piqued my interest. I wish I had a beard that I could scratch because I was intrigued, most definitely. And we're going to have a lot to talk about when we come out with that episode in March.
It's a good thing you don't have a fake beard, though, because you would be your own biggest critic on it.
Right. I mean, especially if it was like blonde or something weird or like a Pepe Le Pew nonsense thing.
So, yeah, we're doing the streaming quarterly, 6 monthly. We don't know what we're titling it yet. But we're doing a streaming, a Netflix-specific review of everything that you can catch up on.
Netflix
quarterly
sounds pretty good, especially if it comes out in March.
But also sounds like we should release a periodical with it. It should be in print.
That's true.
Netflix quarterly, see? Also, we have a couple other special episodes planned. We did a film event with The Last Jedi. It was a two-parter, a non-spoiler review, and then a spoiler review. That got a lot of clicks. You guys really seem to appreciate that. We plan on doing something very similar with the Black Panther movie coming out in February.
February 16th, yes.
It's getting the reviews right now. Is that the screeners have been out, and a lot of the critics have gone to see it.
Well, the premiere, yeah, the premiere came out.
The world premiere, I think, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of critics went to the world premiere, those lucky jerks.
And it's getting... From a fan perspective, it is being received very well, but there are some detractors that are pointing out some not so happy things with it.
Yeah, I mean, the positive is that everybody loves it. So then that's one thing. Some people do say it's very political. It has something to say. And there's been some debate on Slash Film Daily on a couple of different websites about whether or not movies should be that political. Now, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a difference between political and partisan. Like, I think if it's partisan, then maybe that's something to distinguish. I don't know. Like,
you could tell the State of the Union was last night because we're using three-syllable words.
That's right.
It was good.
I liked it.
You're making a point about Steven Spielberg?
So Steven Spielberg, you know, said that the Post wasn't partisan. It was political. It wasn't partisan.
Which we both agree
patriotic
with.
Wasn't partisan is what he said, actually. So... Is Black Panther in that regard just because it has racial politics involved, because it's an African-American superhero movie? Are people going to view that as political? I think there's distinctions to be made there. I don't think.
You would think. I tend to agree with your line of thinking. And also, screw it, man. If there are some political undertones, who gives a shit? This is a movie that's long overdue.
Say what you got to say, man.
I'm extremely happy about it. I'm very excited. I know you are, too.
Yeah, so your expectations,
man, Ryan Coogler's in the Marvel Universe!
Yeah.
Oh, man, Michael B. Jordan's with him again in the Marvel Universe.
He's supposed to be a great villain in this one.
Man, I'm excited. I what about you?
I heard some people talking about how the Michael B. Jordan character made them cry, and that's the villain of the movie.
Wow!
Yeah, so I think Chadwick Boseman's character of the Black Panther in Captain America Civil War was one of the highlights of that movie. I mean, the trailers look awesome. The cinematography blows you away if you've seen it on the big screen. I trust Marvel and the MCU and the Disney people now after all these hits.
And for all the drama that Marvel's had with their directors of certain properties and letting people go and whatnot, Edgar Wright with the Ant-Man saga two summers ago was a big thing. Ryan Coogler's style, to me at least, fits already what Marvel lays out. So I could see this being a really beautiful marriage.
He made such a crowd pleaser with Creed. I mean, that was a top 10 movie of that year for me. I think it was 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I'm a huge Rocky fan, which is shocking to nobody who's seen a picture of me. But
he lives his life as a Rocky cosplayer just by breathing.
Just by walking around. Are you and Balboa cosplaying again, bro? No, man. This is a Wednesday outfit for me. What the hell?
When Mike's not recording, he's working at a pet store.
So, I mean, my expectations for Black Panther couldn't be higher. It's a dream cast. I mean, the GIFs, just the GIFs on Twitter are freaking fantastic.
I can't wait. I'm very hyped up for it.
Are you a little worried? Because I'm a little worried that my expectations might be a little too high after Thor Ragnarok.
For anything but a Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan production, maybe. But
we're setting ourselves up there.
Yeah, I'm sure maybe. But, man, if anyone can surpass them, those guys have done it once. Yeah. I'm excited to see it. So we have... Like we said, the Netflix quarterly, the Black Panther movie event. We also have batted this idea around about looking to the future.
The teaser pod.
The future. Yes. We think we're going to do a year looking forward.
Year in preview.
Year in preview, if you will.
Look at all these names coming out.
So we're going to look through 2018. We're going to pick out different movies that we're excited for, some of which have already hit Sundance and people have already seen them. Hereditary, for me, is a big one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited to see that. It's going to...
That trailer freaked me out.
It's freaky, right? Oh. I have no idea what it's about other than...
The dollhouse?
You can't trust that little girl, I'll tell you that much.
That face on that little girl is old and sage-like.
Something off. There's something off.
A little weird there.
Very excited about that one. There's a couple others that we're going to be getting into. So we're going to give you our Oscar picks for 2018. Now, obviously, it's anybody's guess as to how right these will be, and I'm sure we'll have fun later on down the line.
Making fun of ourselves
when we're totally wrong on a lot of them as we get to the 2019 Oscars. But we want to kind of steer you guys into what's exciting us, give you a little look into our minds, what we're looking forward to, why, anything that we are looking, that we want to see, that is getting our juices going, and we're preparing to see this year. So that's, we're going to do a year in preview, and we're going to present our Oscar picks, again, after these Academy Awards are done. That's something that you guys can look forward to coming from us in the near future.
So last year in March, early March, I think it was, Get Out was released. So it's not
impossible. That was late February, Michael. How dare you?
There you go. So it's not impossible that we can have an Oscar contender, if not an Oscar winner, come out in what used to be crap month. I mean, we could have a major contender come out, not just something that is rumored to be, you know, playing well at Sundance. So we'll see.
Yeah, you have some independent movies that are already getting some buzz. You have those giant blockbusters on the horizon. Infinity War drops this May. Maybe that's going to be good enough to get a little consideration in a category that major blockbusters usually don't. Who knows?
Garland, the Ex Machina director, is coming out with Annihilation.
Yeah,
with Natalie Portman.
There's
involved.
A lot of interesting. It's a shame the movie industry is dying, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of fun stuff on the horizon, and we want to highlight it. We want to kind of give you guys a picture of stuff to look forward to, maybe get you as excited as we are. And one more thing, we got kind of cooking on our stovetop here.
Right now, we're calling it the Oscar Pool Pod, which is basically.
And of all these made up names on the spot, that's the one I'm least happy
that's
with.
The
I just want that on the record.
Oscar predictions, I guess, if we're going to be vanilla. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be us throwing out our predictions for each and every category, including the little ones, not just the big seven. You know, we'll kind of cover the big seven one after another in those category pods. But we're going to do a full Oscar pool pod. We'll probably release it at least a week before. This way you can, you know, bet money on us, and you can
look. One of the two of us may or may not have a slight gambling problem and may or may not already place wagers on the Academy Awards at certain points in our lives,
which is why I don't wager Mike on too many things.
One of us may do that, and there may be other listeners in that same vein that may be looking towards putting a little fun down and keeping themselves interested in the Academy monetarily. So
listen, my pitch to every fantasy sports league that I've ever ran, and I try not to run them anymore, I let better people do it, but has always been like, guys, keep me away from the casino, keep me off of all the betting sites that are now legal and damnably accessible, and I want to just instead bet my friends a couple hundo over the course of like an 8-month period to keep me away from those things. So, yeah, I mean, I don't blame you.
I
don't blame
Oscar.
Him.
He doesn't blame Oscar.
I don't blame Oscar.
Oscar with his horrible, crippling gambling addiction.
Slight gambling.
That's why he lives in a trash can on Sesame Street now.
In a van.
He used to own a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom mansion. So we're going to give you that kind of perspective. We are going to give our picks. We want to do them in enough time before the actual Oscars show to let you guys know in on where we're thinking. So we have a lot of stuff in the fire, like we said. Just to recap, we have obviously the Oscar sprint profiles to finish up. After that, we're going to give you the single category deep dives where we perfect perfection in terms of the actual nominations that are already given out by the Academy. Then we're going to give you our Oscar pool preview where we pick the winners and we predict what is going to happen. And if you want to lay some money down, maybe you do that. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just want to hear what if your predictions jive with ours. We're going to give you that opportunity. Then we're going to give you the Mike and Oscars awards show. We might both wear tuxedos for that and be behind the microphones and have a presenter feed us grapes. I don't know what's going to happen there. We'll figure that out. Where we're going to perfect perfection for the entire year of 2017, and then we're going to give you the events and different kinds of episodes coming up, such as the Black Panther movie event pod, the 2018 year in preview, where we the way too early Oscar picks. We have a lot on the horizon for ourselves. We're trying to keep things interesting, fresh, and relevant for you guys. Obviously, we're going to get back to doing our retrospectives as the months pass by and perfect perfection of all Oscar races of the past, highlight some of the more unique Oscar races that have happened in history, and keep the movie industry relevant for you guys, and hopefully really fun and give you a year-long perspective to base the Academy Awards off of and make it a year-long thing as opposed to just a couple months a year where you get excited about it.
So we got an angle on the movie world. We're talking about it through the scope of the Oscars. But, yeah, I mean, like we said, Get Out came out early last year. They changed the paradigm, and it didn't seem like a quote-unquote Oscar movie by any stretch of the mind. I mean, a horror comedy by a first-time director is now nominated X amount of times. So, yeah, we're going to have fun with it. We got a lot of stuff in store.
So, that's the future, immediate future of Mike, Mike, and Oscar, and what you guys can look forward to in listening. We're going to cover some other Hollywood hot take topics now, and as we unfortunately have had to do every episode thus far, we're going to lead off with the Sex Assault Update, the Wheel of Awfulness. And what do we have?
The Wonder Wheel, if you will.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, God.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
What do we have on what's been happening lately in the awful, horrible world of sex assault and allegation?
So James Franco follow-up. Supposedly there's more news coming about him. That's via a source for IndieWire on their podcast. Vanity Fair left him off their cover. That was a big
That was a big move. Deal. A lot of people made a lot of hubbub about that. Strictly speaking, from a professional standpoint, you kind of feel bad because this disaster artist performance was the performance of his career thus far, and now he may not have a career.
Well, 127 hours was pretty big.
It was up there. It's true. But 127 hours didn't get the amount of publicity, mainstream publicity, as this one, I would think. I would argue. James Franco being off Vanity Fair, it's a big deal. Vanity Fair is pretty lauded for how their covers go and who they highlight, especially during awards season. So, yeah, he's not there.
He's a jerk.
Well, rightfully so. If he did,
we said
things.
He was a jerk. We sided with the allegations way back. I mean, it sounds like a scumbag. Again,
yeah,
you know, nobody's taking out their pitchforks here, but you know, to change centuries long perceptions, right, on women who make allegations against men in power, you know, I think it's healthy that we at least take the perspective of taking their allegations seriously, and then when the details come out and he doesn't refute them, he doesn't defend himself, and he takes the high road somehow, it's bizarre, and it really twisted us up about him, and that really was like a red flag for me. So I don't know.
I mean,
if he's exonerated at the end of the day, and I know that these things are litigated on Twitter and in the media now, and it's difficult to gauge fact from fiction, to gauge, you know, all the layers that are necessarily there. But it doesn't look good for him, and that's where we're leaning now. Alison Brie and Dane Franco, you know, said they supported both the Time's Up movement and their family on the SAG's red carpet. That was just another
what are they
update
supposed
on
to
the
say,
story.
Right?
I mean, I don't know what they could say. They seem to say it well. I like both of those personalities. I like them both as actors.
It's so bizarre that the initial thinking for so long has been to side with the accuser or the accusee and not the accuser, because it takes a sick person to that would make up an allegation like this totally from scratch. I'm not saying it's never happened. Obviously it has, and it's been terrible,
right,
just as much when it has. But it takes a sick person to make up an allegation like that, and it takes someone so incredibly strong to decide to speak up and say their truth when it does happen. And instead of being lauded for their truth and their strength and their fortitude.
Just this year, Marshall came out, right?
Yeah.
And Marshall is a movie about Thurgood Marshall, starring Chadwick Boseman. They made it, you know, a year ago. And it is totally tone deaf to the Time's Up movement that they never could have known was going to happen. Because it's about a female allegation. It's about the one court, well, not the one court case, but a court case that Thurgood Marshall won that involved a woman lying about sexual assault. And I'm glad it's not getting as much play, even though Sterling K. Brown was great in it, and so was Jennifer Hudson, and so was Chadwick Boseman, Josh Gad for that matter as well. The movie was solid. It wasn't great, but it's a movie that has gotten zero play during this award season because of, you know, bad timing is an understatement for it. So we've had that kind of story come out for years. Right, you've had The Crucible, you've had that one, you've had, you know, however many more. So with men controlling Hollywood, with men controlling the story industry, you've had stories that basically make the claim or the shout the warning flag that these allegations made can be dangerous. Okay, yeah, fine. We right. get it. They can be. But it's also, it's probably 100 times more dangerous not to take any allegations of that magnitude seriously.
And the ratio is bewildering, because you're siding with the extreme circumstances if you don't believe these claims. Because for every 100 claims of sexual assault and abuse, how many are actually going to be fake? You know, right. five?
It's going to be two? A much smaller percentage.
Right. And so our public mindset and the collective mindset.
And we're not going out on a limb on that.
No.
Yeah.
Our collective mindset for so long has been to side with the extreme outliers. It right. makes no sense if you actually sit and think about it.
Yes.
And this movement and these movements and these actions and these survivors and
right.
all of this taken in total make you think about it. And finally. That's a good thing.
Finally.
And that's what we keep saying. So you have to listen to these people with their stories. You have to support them. You have to give credence and credit and all the credit in the world to the people who are strong enough to speak up, and give the support and all the credit in the world for people who are not yet ready to speak up.
Right.
It's about time, and time's up. It's about time that this is the perspective. This is the prevailing thought.
These are the most privileged jobs in the entertainment industry, some of them. So for these men of power, of influence, to be controlling the industry for so long, for them to shape narratives only in their favor, right? It's just, it's scary. I mean, you look all the way back, not just to Weinstein, Charlie Chaplin, right? Yeah. I mean, Charlie Chaplin, yeah, serial pedophile who's marrying 13-year-old girls. It's disgusting. You know, I mean,
it's a really good
and
point.
He's a pillar of the industry. So it has to change, and it's good that things are out there now the way it is, and that conversations are happening like this. So the next piece of news was that Casey Affleck is sitting out the Oscars. He's traditionally the best actor Oscar winner from the year before. He presents the best actress, the lead actress award the following year, and he is sitting out these Oscars.
Now, this is we call this Hollywood hot take, and this is exactly what I'm about to say is. I have nothing to go off of, but I would think with the Academy having all new members that it did and trying to be more of a social justice pillar and a thing for good in Hollywood and kind of be the shining example and the lead in some of these cases, you would imagine there had to be some back channel conversations between the Academy and Casey Affleck at some point to kind of say, look, we don't want to be proactive in this. We don't want to tell you you're banned or you can't show up, but it might be better for everyone involved if you were to kind of take yourself out of the picture and remove yourself from giving this award in this year.
Right. I mean,
I don't know if there's anyone wrong in this circumstance. I think his only move was to stay home. I don't think he can give that award this year.
So, I mean, his allegations have been litigated, mm-hmm. literally. I mean, we don't know those as well as others, but he has made settlements on his own behalf.
Which are being, again, this is a very dangerous thing, in that all settlements are being demonized. And that's my lawyer brain talking, because, again, on its face of it, you would think settlements are done to keep the victims quiet, and that's not a good thing, and obviously it's not. But also, legally, there is a rule in evidence that says that past settlements are not to be considered guilt, expressions of guilt.
Well, yeah.
That's a legal standard. That's not my thinking.
The court of public opinion doesn't
right.
have to
exactly.
abide by those.
Exactly. So
if it looks like a duck, mm-hmm. and a lot of people have been changing their perception and just seeing a lot of ducks out there, let's just say that much.
Yeah. So I don't disagree with that. I just wanted to inject that. Where other people might be coming from, and it could be a dangerous precedent. We'll see what happens, but you're right. It's gross. Like everything else we talk about, it's gross.
So the next big one is Woody Allen. There's been a lot of renunciations or denunciations of his work by actors who have worked with him. Rebecca Hall has famously donated her salary to the Time's Up movement from a movie that she did for Woody Allen, back a ways. And, Chalamet has had some comments
some big,
on it.
Some big names lately that have kind of come out about him.
Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation, right? I don't know how he's kind of been Teflon through all this, because he has a history of being just a questionable at best human being.
So this is a quagmire for a lot of us as film critics, for a lot of us as movie enthusiasts, film students, because who has never watched a Woody Allen movie? He comes out with a movie a year. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the most critically acclaimed. I mean, he's had documentaries made about him over the last 10 years that have basically been a career achievement awards given to him. Now, we have Wonder Wheel that came out this year. Yes, I saw it. I think Kate Winslet was going to be on my list somewhere, and I felt like, you know, I should see it. And I did go into it with a gross feeling. I mean, he's made a lot of movies about characters who literally get away with murder. He writes a lot of stories about characters who do something awful and heinous and have to wrestle with it. And usually it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, that cathartic? Is that self-reflective? Right. You definitely feel gross watching
it. If you put the pieces together on his story and the allegations made by Dylan Farrow, his former stepdaughter, I want to say, it doesn't look good. It looks damning against Woody Allen. And the fact that he's accused of molesting his stepdaughter when she's 7 years old, and years later, he marries his next stepdaughter, his adopted stepdaughter, Soon Yi. I mean, that right there, just, again, we're not taking out our pitchforks. We're just stating an opinion, but that looks as gross as ever anything I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah,
it's
disgusting.
The fact that, you know, Mia Farrow left him based on the fact that she found nude pictures of Soon Yi, who at her youngest was supposedly 17 at the time of this. At her oldest, she could have been 20. They didn't know her age when they adopted her.
A whole another range of issues. It's just everything. I don't understand how it's taken this long to have this comeuppance, because this is a history of, what, 20, 25 years of publicly known outlandish, bizarre behavior and downright disgusting behavior at times?
Yeah, so it's causing all the film critics, and I've watched a lot of, you know, What the Flick guys, again, they're one of my favorites. They've wrestled with the Woody Allen, you know, allegations, you know, kind of being relitigated by Dylan Farrell, doing a lot of publicity right now in the media since the Time's Up movement started. And you know, a lot of them said they're done with Woody Allen, and I don't know where I'm at about it. Roman Polanski, Woody Allen, Bryan Singer, all these guys accused of horrible things. Should they just be blacklisted from the industry based on accusations that look pretty damning? I don't know. I think it's again, these are privileged jobs, and I don't know. If it looks like a duck, I wouldn't want to work with that. Duck.
I mean, the only logical step in our thinking is if we are saying that you have to support these victims and support the people calling out these allegations, like we keep saying we have to, I don't know how we can support these monsters still being allowed to make these projects.
I mean, all the signs point to him being guilty as sin.
Yeah, it's gross.
And it looks gross. Now, does every actor who's ever worked with them, do they have to be put on trial and make a renunciation and a denouncement or whatever and donate their salary back? Is that necessary? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't
know what the answer is. I don't know what right.
I'm sure people have harsh opinions. Like, yes, everybody who's ever worked with them should donate their money to the Time's Up movement.
I have no doubt that opinions on what is the quote-unquote right thing to do in these circumstances vary far and wide. I'm not knowledgeable enough or a smart enough man to know what for sure is the right thing to do. I don't know that anyone is.
And should people be held accountable? Like, okay, he married his stepdaughter after he was accused of molesting his stepdaughter, and you're going to go and do a movie with this guy? Should Greta Gerwig and Timothy Chalamet and Ellie Fanning be basically put on trial about how could you do a movie with this guy after this? You know, or as this movement's going on,
yeah,
or before,
how far does,
you know,
the liability
spread? How did you not put the pieces together before you decided to work with this person? But the problem is, all of us kind of had the sense that these things were litigated, that we didn't want to touch them with a 10-foot pole, that they were accusations that were probably false in our minds, or at least so murky that we didn't want to talk about it. So we gave him a pass.
And we kept seeing his movies, and that the studios kept giving him money to make more movies and get these high name actors. Everyone's to blame a little bit for something.
So, yeah, I mean, if this is a monster that's been working for years, a child predator, which I don't see any worse monster than that. And it
17.
But that's Soon Yi. I mean, Dylan Farrell was 7.
It's just all gross.
During those allegations. And there were, this is the grossest thing about it, the prosecutor in Connecticut wanted to press charges, and then he and the Farrows decided not to. They didn't want to put little Dylan, who was 7 years old, through it all, through that public trial, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, gross.
I don't know what the right answer is. I don't know what the right thing to do is in this circumstance. I just know that I don't know how you can justify these monsters still getting work.
So that's where everybody's at. So, I mean, everybody's kind of leaning on the side that we would take here. I mean, we're not taking a side. We're saying, look, I mean, a Woody Allen movie comes out next year. I don't know if I'm going to watch it.
I don't think
I'm going to watch it. If we have a retrospective with Woody Allen in it, I don't know if we're going to release it.
Which we do, by the way. I mean, we tape before, you know, and we're just as much to blame because
we've had this conversation.
We joked about it. We didn't take it seriously. We definitely pointed it out.
And we said it was gross, and we said it was awful, and yeah.
But we have an 89 Best Original Screenplay episode that may not see the light of day, or at least needs to be re-recorded, because Crimes and Misdemeanors was one of the nominees, and it's just, it's bizarre. It's all, if you take a step back from it, just watching and linking up the different pieces and seeing where we done to get to this point as a society and as a film industry, it's just weird. It's weird and it's gross and it feels wrong, and it's a good thing.
But I think it's a good thing, and I think it's a good thing that people are taking a step back from him and denounce him if you will, but also just don't support his work. I mean, if you think he's a gross human being, don't support
his
work.
That's the answer. That's the step that you could take personally, right? I know I won't from now on. I can't.
Right. Well, you can't watch him. Yeah. Right. All right. So that's Woody Allen. So to close and to kind of transition a tad, you know, Aziz Ansari, I think a lot of those conversations in the media have been healthy. And I'm very glad for him. Now, Aziz Ansari, that situation has been characterized from anything from a bad hookup to possible sexual assault. It's also proposed distinctions by some great pundits on MSNBC and on The View. I don't know if I call The View great pundit, but they had great conversations. Let's say that much right now. Whoopi Goldberg and company had great conversations about the fact that, you know, this may have been a non-criminal sexual activity, but it's still violating. And I think those conversations sparked are a damned good thing. And again, it's tough to litigate on Twitter. Can men be mind readers on one hand? But should a woman who just goes back to a man's apartment just immediately be, you know, subjected to any form of sexual assault, violating, criminal, date rape in any way, shape, or form? Does that mean, you know, we got to rethink our social mores? Because a lot of the people talking out about this say that, okay, my mom always told me when I was growing up that if you go back to a man's apartment, it probably tells him or signals to him that you're good to go, you're ready for sexual activity. And that shouldn't be the case.
No, absolutely not.
You know, give me a break. A nightcap. I mean, I get the perception. I'm saying the perception is wrong. So even if she wasn't sure, that shouldn't, you know, go against her in the court of public opinion. And if we have to change our assumptions about that, and if we have to change, you know, the way we think about that, then we should. And these conversations are helping.
Yeah, the narrative being what it is, and it's making everyone think, and I keep saying it like a broken record, and I'm going to keep saying it forever, so I'm sorry if you're sick of it, but if it makes you think about these things, you have to stop for a second and make a take and have an understanding or try to see things from a different perspective about these issues. That's not a bad thing. That's going to be a good thing.
Right, and that's an area where distinctions are being made, and again, I think that's good too, because that's
the one thing
adult argument.
The one thing that's coming out of all of this is that there are the men out there on social media that are outraged and they're throwing up their hands and saying, oh, these feminists and these women are making it impossible for men to talk to women. You know, even if we say hello, it's going to be
overreaction.
If that's your take from all of this, you're a bad person. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a bad take.
It's a bad take.
Because if you don't know how to say hi without thinking that you might be in danger of sexual assaulting someone or being sexually inappropriate.
It's overdramatic. It's wrong. It's a wrong take. I mean, they're not bad people. It's just they're saying something wrong, and they need to be corrected on it. Yes, we're getting into a little morality policing territory here, but you know the industry is discussing it, and we're taking moral stances one way or the other, so we have to. And in my opinion. The perception and the argument has to change from, like I said, the centuries long, you know, defend the one man who was lied about versus the 99 men mm-hmm. who are guilty of sin. You know, we got to change that 100%.
So let's try to talk about pivot now and talk about some happier stuff. We've done a lot on sexual assault and sexual allegations, and it's important and it needs to be talked about and it needs to be hammered home and discussed 18 ways from Sunday. If you pivot your beliefs or if we're making a little headway in your mind to have you stop and think about things, that's a good start. And that's all we could ask. And I know it certainly has made us stop and think about things in a different way, in a different manner. And as we go through this, and it's always interesting. It always keeps us coming back for how we have to form these opinions and have to take these stances. Right. And that's not a bad thing.
So the next big story, and I think we should transition with this just briefly, is the State of the Union was last night, like we said. So reactions, you know, Mark Ruffalo and Alyssa Milano, they held a Spirit of the Union counter to it. Jimmy Kimmel and
Colbert went Stephen live.
Colbert went live
Kimmel
right
had
after
Stormy
it.
Daniels on. Colbert just kind of did a recap. He had the Pod Save America guys on, actually,
right,
to recap the State of the Union. Alyssa Milano, I just saw this morning, actually tweeted at President Trump and said, hey, President Trump, sorry your ratings were so low, and then linked a article from the Hollywood Reporter that said that the ratings of the State of the Union were down 9% from Obama's last one, so I'm sure that'll tickle him pink.
Yeah, there's a lot of shots being thrown, and some of it, in my opinion, is, I don't want to say dirty, but it's just, to me, it's unnecessary, and it gets a little childish.
You and I kind of differ on the Stormy Daniels thing.
That's fine. I just think, you know, I think he's being an asshole, Jimmy Kimmel, for having Stormy Daniels on then, at that time. I mean, come on. You know, the guy gives a State of the Union. He is our president. Respect the office. I think, you know, he said a lot of good things in the State of the Union. There's a lot of, you know, heroic tales over the past year.
The State of the Union was not all bad.
That I'd like to see movies about. I mean, these people are freaking heroes, and he talked about them. And again, I mean, he is our president. I think you need to respect the office. That's my opinion. I got a lot of friends who are Republicans, even though I am a Democrat. But I have a lot of friends and relatives who are Republicans. I got a lot of friends and relatives who are policemen and work for the government. So
Could you imagine if Obama was in a scandal where he may have slept with a porn star and paid her to keep her quiet, if that was questionable enough as to whether or not it happened to the point where it was getting mainstream media coverage, he would be treated?
The question to bring it back to Hollywood is, like, is it Hollywood's place to just go at the president?
It's got nothing to do with Hollywood. You said it's dirty for Kimmel
I'm
to have Stormy Daniels on.
I'm just saying it feels like cheap shots.
Okay, so I'm asking you, since you have that opinion, reverse the tale. If it was Obama in that situation.
And on the opposite media would take cheap shots galore. I'm not saying either side is right. I'm saying you probably should consider what he said, analyze what he said. I have no problem with the Pod Save America guys coming out. I have no problem with Colbert analyzing what happened. I have a little bit of a problem with, you know, this side story about porn star.
But it's mainstream news, too. I mean, look, I'm not a Trump supporter, but it's important. If our president banged a porn star and paid her off to keep quiet in a year where the sexual assault stuff and the power dynamic stuff is always at the forefront of everything, it's not the same argument, obviously, but it is something that should be discussed.
Bill Clinton's affairs
was discussed to death.
was discussed to death. Now, if a Republican news outlet or a late night show brought in all of his accusers or one of his accusers after his State of the Union, I mean, that's a cheap shot.
How about if a candidate for president brought in four accusers and had her sit in the front row?
Cheap shot.
Yeah.
I mean, gross politics. So I don't think any of those things
are
right.
So you want to be above it all? You want to be above it all?
I think we should try to get the discourse back where it needs to be.
I just think you demonize the other side. I don't think having Stormy Daniels on is a cheap shot.
I just think you infuriate the other side, especially now with all these bipartisan things they're trying to do.
It's big news.
But it doesn't have to be covered right after the State of the Union.
That's too
tough.
I'll concede that part. That's fair.
Just give the middle finger to the presidency. And I think that's wrong. I don't think we should do that. And I think Kimmel's wrong in doing that. When Kimmel comes out and talks about health care, that's an issue, right? And when he comes out, he's talking about...
You're making a good distinction, and I don't...
It's an issue.
The timing of it, sure, I can concede it's, that point.
The timing just seems like a dirty play to me.
But I mean, where's the line? If he were to have her on tonight, would it be dirty? If he were to have her on next week, would it be dirty? Like, where's the line where it's okay to have
it? Don't have it right after the State of the Union. Have political pundits. If you want to talk about the State of the Union, do what Colbert did and have the Pod Save America guys. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but... I didn't see that. I love those guys. But
this is why we spend our time talking about movies and not politics.
Right. Well, I think it's important because we've worked in some politics, but also Hollywood.
Hollywood definitely.
Hollywood is coming out and screaming about politics right now.
They are. So, and like you said, the Mark Ruffalos and the Alyssa Milanos and the Rose McGowans, they're talking not only about all the Time's Up movements and the social movements, it's all about Trump and they're taking these radical stances. Oprah making her speech at the Golden Globes, and all of a sudden she's a presidential candidate. I agree. As days go by, I start to agree more and more with Seth MacFarlane that we're getting dangerously close to that dystopian universe where fame equals all the relevance you need for perspective on global issues, and that's certainly not the case.
We discussed some of the pros and cons with that back during our Golden Globes
recap. Yep.
Yeah, so there's pros and cons. I mean, Oprah's a fascinating figure that deserves to be
And that's
considered.
Not me saying Oprah doesn't have the correct
now,
role.
You said that in the last episode. We both think the world of her. The problem is, you know, is she qualified to run the country and be the commander in chief? We don't know. I mean, and a lot of the Pod Save America guys, for instance, want her to be vetted through the political process. And the scary part is, can the political process still vet people or not? We don't know. But, yeah, I mean, could The Rock run for president in 10 years from now?
Yes.
Give me a...
No, you're right. It's
Tom Hanks. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, who knows? Right?
They joked about that on Saturday Night Live. So Saturday Night Live had something about, you know, the sexual assault in terms of, you know, they did a skit with Will Ferrell at the dinner table. And a lot of us feel that way where everybody starts to talk about it and they feel the conversation has to go there. And then the other person, the gag of it was just, oh, be careful. So watch that skit. I mean, I think we've avoided that level of shyness, at least for all of you in these conversations. But so, yeah, I mean, now we're going to get into the lighter subjects,
I guess. Can we joke for fuck's sake? Can we say something that'll make us laugh? Here's a what if. If Ed Norton doesn't throw a fit on the set of The Hulk in 2005 or 6, does Mark Ruffalo have a career anymore?
Mark Ruffalo is in a lot of independent movies. He's in a lot of good movies.
He's great in Zodiac.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of my favorite-ish actors. I like him.
But is he important enough to get a State of the Dream address to rival the State of the Union type deal?
The actual Hulk sells the Hulk. So Ed Norton, as good as he was in the Incredible Hulk, I think it was. Yeah, I mean, I don't care. That's my honest answer. Like,
that's a good stance.
That's the least.
I don't care.
That's the character I care the least about. Bruce Banner. I care about the Hulk, and the Hulk is brilliantly funny in Thor Ragnarok.
Rank your top five favorite Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, the Hulk is fun. Like, if they get the Bruce Banner story right at some point, then great. But Ang Lee couldn't do it. Whoever directed the Incredible Hulk couldn't do it. You know, and I think Taika Waititi got more mileage on the Avengers guys. They got more mileage on the character of the Hulk, not Bruce Banner.
Yeah, that's somewhat of a cheap shot by me towards Mark Ruffalo. I do love him. I think he's a phenomenal actor, but it does go to a point of he has this platform because he is in this multi-billion-dollar franchise.
Then again, you're kind of right because he's one of the highlights, Mark Ruffalo, Bruce Banner, in the Avengers 2. So.
Right.
So there's a debate there.
A glimmer of something.
Something. we're gonna jump now into the Razzies, and if we
how's get that for loud, a transitional phrase?
If we get loud about this, don't judge us too harshly. But Darren Aronofsky is Best Director nominated for a Razzie. Worst Actress has nominated Jennifer Lawrence. Worst Supporting Actor is Javier Bardem. What WTF here?
Yeah, you go back to our episode one, and we raved about Mother in as much as it was a fascinating watch for sure, but we loved Jennifer Lawrence in it. She carries the movie. We appreciated the Bardem performance. We railed, if anything's to fault with Mother, it's the marketing campaign.
Right, critically acclaimed by most critics. And that's
What are your feelings?
That's a factual statement.
What are your feelings of the Razzies overall?
Well, I think it's healthy to say these are terrible movies and this is a fun award show to be kind of a parody of the Oscars, and that's fine. I mean, call out bad Hollywood movies. No problem with that. I think that's unique, and it could be satire and parody, like I said. So why do you got the movie that you hate that's critically beloved? Why do they all got to call out Mother? It makes no sense because it's undeniably good filmmaking. I mean, can you watch the beginning of that movie and say that Darren Aronofsky doesn't know what he's doing? Are you kidding me?
Well, they have a history. The Razzies have a history.
I'd like to hear this.
Of some missteps. They nominated, in the first year they did it was 81. They nominated Kubrick for The Shining for Worst Director. They nominated...
I'm going to punch something.
They nominated De Palma
again,
for Scarface.
Again, I'm not a huge De Palma fan, but... De Palma's Scarface, that's well done.
They
that's
have some
cultural
legendary. They nominated the girl, Heather Donahue, I think her name was, in Blair Witch for Worst Actress. That movie was revolutionary. I mean, she didn't put on a great performance, but that changed the horror genre.
So, come on, if you got a polarizing performance that's like a 50%, I mean, you should owe it to the people not to nominate that. So this
nominated
is going
DeVito
for headlines.
For his portrayal of the Penguin in Batman Returns? Come on.
Come on. A lot of people love that,
now,
too.
I mean,
who's voting? That's the question.
Anybody with $40. That's the Razzies contingent. If you want to sign up to get a ballot, you just have to pay their fee, which is a $40 fee.
So the audience of Star Wars is voting. Right. I mean, that's what could have happened. Like, could Star Wars have been all over this? Because half the people voted, and most of the people saw it, and then half the people who disliked it voted.
Right.
I mean, come on.
And I'm like you. I don't think having the Razzies exist in and of themselves is a bad thing. I think it's actually a good thing. It's fun that Hollywood can thumb its nose at itself. I mean, Halle Berry showed up to accept her Worst Actress for her portrayal in Catwoman. Yeah, that was funny. Sandra Bullock showed up to accept the Razzie for All About Steve, which is the movie with Bradley Cooper, which was a shit show. I think it's good when Hollywood can prove that it doesn't take itself too seriously. The problem I have is if you're an award show that's thumbing its nose at the industry, you're going to be like the counterculture. You're going to be the cool kids smoking against the school. Mm-hmm. You can't take yourself seriously. Which is what kind of the Razzies have done over the years. The guy that started it is on the record as standing by his opinion that Kubrick and The Shining wasn't enough tension in a movie. He's on the record as defending that De Palma doesn't have any vision. I mean, come on!
Give me a break.
Things change over time. And I know I'm on the record previously.
You're disqualified.
I'm on the record previously of saying stand by your opinion. And I mean that when a movie first comes out. But
your opinion shouldn't...
It should evolve.
But it also shouldn't control the whole award show and the nominations process.
Right. And it should evolve over time. I mean, you
should
grow
as a
critic.
They should have an academy that's better for this. They should have a voting body that makes more sense. Like, why can't the critics vote for the Razzies? Why can't they organize this? And it doesn't have to be the elite critics. It could be regular critics. There's a lot of regular critics. I think all the podcast hosts should vote for the Razzies, and that's it.
You should be Timothy Chalamet in Lady Bird. You shouldn't be Ben Affleck in Dazed and Confused. Don't take yourself so goddamn seriously. If you're a joke, be a joke. Be a parody unto yourself.
So this year's Worst Picture nominees are Baywatch, The Emoji Movie, 50 Shades Darker, The Mummy, and Transformers The Last Knight. You know, Tom Cruise had a notable Worst Actor nominee, Johnny Depp as well, Zac Efron, Mark Wahlberg, Worst Actress. You had Jennifer Lawrence in there, like I said. You had Tyler Perry in Worst Actress and Emma Watson. You had Russell Crowe.
See, stuff like that's hilarious.
Russell Crowe and Mel Gibson and Anthony Hopkins in Worst Supporting Actor.
Great.
You had Susan Sarandon, Kim Basinger, and Goldie Hawn in Worst Supporting Actress. Worst Screen Combo. You had any combination of two humans, two robots, or two explosions of Transformers.
And that's where the Razzie shines.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, that Worst Combo previously, when Mordecai came out, one of the nominees was Johnny Depp and his mustache.
Right.
Yeah, like, it's beautiful. That's your sweet spot. Stay in that lane.
And if enough of, I guess if you fixed your voting body, I'd be better with this. And if the voting body somehow all hated one movie that all the critics loved or whatever, went against it, all right, so be it. At least I know what's going on.
Right.
It's not just everybody who, you know, votes at home. I mean, no offense to anybody who votes at home, but come on.
Yeah.
If it's a People's Choice Awards, the Razzies, then that's a little weird.
So let's go on to another award show that happened recently that we've yet to pass comment on. The Screen Actors Guild Awards was one of the biggies that we keep referring to that happened, and we didn't really talk about it much.
We live tweeted it. We did cover it on Twitter there. But yeah, so Gary Oldman wins. Frances McDormand wins. Sam Rockwell, Allison Janney win. You know, all the acting categories.
Usual names. No big surprises. Three Billboards took home Best Film.
Last year, Denzel won the Best Actor, and it kind of made a race out of it. So now these four didn't really create any new shocking race to it. So that's going to be something we're going to talk about in the Best Acting pods.
Yeah, pretty consistently throughout this year with the guilds and the critics' choices and all the award circles, you've had those four names for the acting categories. It's Janney, Rockwell, Oldman, McDormand. Are those going to be the four names announced on Oscar Sunday? This is going to help.
Favorites, Bets in Vegas. Wonder Woman also got a win for Outstanding Performance by a Stunt Ensemble in a Motion Picture. We're not going to cover the TV section of that, but it is an interesting night. There's some cool presenters. It was an all-female presenting group.
Yes, that was very cool. Very, very cool. And more about the females, too. The Grammys just happened this past Sunday. Kesha put on a very heartfelt, emotional performance.
Oh, really?
All the surrounding women were in white, kind of juxtaposing when they appeared in black for the Time's Up movement at the Golden Globes.
I like stuff like that.
Yeah, I do too.
Be optimistic about the future. So that's good.
I agree. And kind of the Phoenix Rising type deal. So the last kind of section we want to wrap up with, just to give you a glimpse into the future, look into my nipples of the future.
Is that a quote
from Rocco's somewhere? Modern Life?
No, it's not.
Where are you, really, really big man? lost myself. We'll talk about some movies that are on the horizon that have not yet, some that have dropped trailers, some that are just kind of getting their pieces together. The Tarantino 1969 movie seems to be making news every week.
Leonardo DiCaprio has been cast, allegedly. He's going to play an aging actor of a Western TV show, apparently. So,
okay.
Whatever that means. I don't care. It's just Leo's in a Tarantino movie again. I'm super psyched. Al Pacino, Margot Robbie, Tom Cruise, Jennifer Lawrence have all been rumored. So we're just hoping a few of those names.
Budget. The budget for that cast.
I hope so. And then hopefully you get some of the standbys. But, I mean, that movie's, I can't be more excited about it.
Leo and Jennifer Lawrence on the screen at the same time? Oh, man. Swoon. Hearts everywhere are going to be racing.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, so that's interesting. They already said they're going to cover Manson. And they've yet to cast the Manson role, I don't think, unless it's already done and kept under wraps. I was getting my serial killing movies confused because Zac Efron's playing Ted Bundy in a different that era a biopic about him. So yeah, it's interesting.
Weird choice by him. He's universally beloved. Now he's gonna play a serial murderer.
Yeah, well, that's why. Hey, Ted Bundy was notorious. He was a good looking guy. He seduced all these women and murdered them, and real stand up gentleman.
So you're gonna put the best looking guy to play him.
Just flash those abs, Hollywood. Baby. Flash those abs and stab me.
Hollywood. So yeah, I mean, that's a 1969 movie. I mean, again, we can't have higher expectations for it. I do wonder if it's going to be like Tarantino's take on Mindhunter, if it's just going to be like a sprawling epic, or if it's just going to be
focused on
a certain murder or a certain plot. I don't know.
I don't know either.
And he's usually pretty focused.
Especially you're going to have Leo playing a done over the hill movie or TV star and going to incorporate the Manson family murder somehow into that. It's going to be interesting.
Bizarro let world.
So what about Tarantino staying busy? going to take over the Star Trek universe too, it seems.
Yeah, just a little follow-up. Some of this is old news, but yeah, Patrick Stewart came out kind of the day that we, you know, recorded our pod, and he said, oh, he would totally act in it. Tarantino's known to have liked the Next Generation series, the Luke Picard character, Captain Luke Picard, that Patrick Stewart played. Now, an interesting tidbit, Tarantino says some of the classic episodes of Star Trek could easily be expanded to 90 minutes or more. He thought that, you know, these new Star Trek movies are a little too ensemble oriented. And that's something we've praised for movies that do it right. When they go ensemble and they give everybody a full arc. You know, Tarantino kind of thinks you can do it the old way and have just a focused storyline. So I'm wondering, will it just focus on two characters? His upcoming Star Trek movie. I mean, if it must have had a juicy hook, and will it involve multiple captains?
Pine going to be there sharing the screen and the captain role with Stewart? How much is Stewart going to be integrated into the plot if he's there at all? A lot of questions. Hey, look, they took Leonard Nimoy in the first reboot of the Star Trek, and they had him. They showed that it's a universe that can contain multiple of the same character. There was two Spocks.
Right. So it's going to be rated R, which is just juicy. And
green blood everywhere. Oh, alien blood covering everyone's face.
I can't wait. So that's the Tarantino follow-up. Ant-Man new trailer with Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, and He Who Shall Not Be Named. It was Christopher Plummer not available for reshoots there, Marvel, before you released this trailer. I mean, said everyone.
Kind of an odd choice, too, in that trailer to give Douglas the big, powerful comedic line at the end of it. When he's referring, you gave her blasters? You didn't have that technology when you made my suit.
Which is fun, and yeah, I mean, the Wasp character seems fun. Obviously, I'll pay to see a Marvel movie that just has...
This was one of the big surprises when it came out the first time, the first Ant-Man.
Shrink rays and, you know, monster-sized buttons.
Explode things giant size.
It's a good supporting cast.
Paul Rudd having a big week with trailers. For one, with a glorious mustache and mute, and now one sans mustache, and we're playing Ant-Man. I didn't have expectations for the first one, really, and that one killed at the box office, so why not?
Whatever. So another movie I can't wait to see, Mike, is Dundee, starring Hugh Jackman and Russell Crowe and the Hemsworth brothers
Margot Robbie. Yeah. How did they get all these people for this movie?
And the guy from the Foot Fist Way and Eastbound and Down, what's his name?
Kenny Powers.
Yes, that's his real name. So, I mean, this movie, it's got to be great, right? Fake movie alert.
And it got everyone. It got the internet in a hubbub. And now there are people. Look, it's all these Australian actors getting, and Kenny Powers, getting together for an Australian tourism ad under the guise of a reboot of Crocodile Dundee called Dundee.
Right.
And now everyone's upset that the movie's not happening because look at that cast. Who wouldn't want to see the Hemsworths and Robbie? And
green light it now. Just make the movie, damn it.
I wouldn't be surprised if they actually get this going.
Crazier things have happened,
Danny McBride ascending to the throne of Paul Hogan's glorious crocodile hunting character. Why not? Make it. Money, Hollywood. Throw some at this.
Chris Hemsworth was funny in the trailer, too. Margot Robbie.
They're
funny.
All there.
He's got a machete demanding free beer. I mean, come on.
But yeah, apparently that's a fool of the internet. They thought it was going to be a reboot for Dundee. No. It's just a tourism ad for Australia that's going to air during the Super Bowl, apparently. So good for Australia. Their marketing budget must be huge.
Made a great trailer, Australia. The nation of Australia.
Kim Kardashian gets naked this week, and that's going to break the internet. No, says Danny McBride.
Yeah.
No. So that's it. That's what's going on in the world of Hollywood lately. Those are a couple of topics that have been nipping at our heels. We wanted to get off our chests and give you guys some hot takes and tell you guys what's coming up in the world of Mike, and Oscar for the MMO Empire. Any takes that you have, anything you want to hear us cover, anything that you heard that you disagree with or agree with, let us know. We love hearing from you as always. We're going to recap. You can get at us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MMO_pod on Twitter. We have a lot of great conversations on there lately with a lot of you, so keep following us on all those platforms, Mike, and Oscar@gmail.com and Mike, and Oscar on Reddit.
Talk to us.
We're everywhere. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
We're everywhere.
We should be everywhere.
There's no such thing as overexposure.
talk to us. We want to hear from you. We love hearing from you guys. Be on the lookout. We're going to finish up our Oscar sprint profile soon enough in the next week or so, and then it's headlong into the final stretch. And
last month of previewing Oscars Big Night, category pods, other fun stuff.
And maybe someday in the future, Mike and I can sleep. Maybe not together, but just sleep. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in.
See ya.